They'll teach you history, yeah. But they'll teach you what they want you to think. What they want you to think is,
and none of it has ever been true.
Man, I'm just out here being.
I'm being black.
Being Black on Earth, the podcast. It's Friday. Time to free up after the weekly grind. Get ready for the weekend. Dates with bae. Time with the kids. That's usually a good weekend. Some people work their side hustle because, you know, you got to do that. Well, Black History Month is over, which is really for white people. White people's Black History Month is over. So teachers will be taking Martin Luther King and Wilma Rudolph off the wall like they do with the Christmas lights after Christmas. Man, what a crazy White People's Black History Month. There's so many weird shit happened in the shortest month of the year. It's like R. Kelly, Jesse Smollett. This was the year for blackface. Companies putting out blackface, politicians wearing blackface, Liam Neeson hunting black men. Yeah, Steve Harvey totally selling out. Cohen confessions. A bunch of crazy stuff went down. Could you consider Green Book a black movie? I haven't seen it and I have absolutely no desire to see Green Book. Don't ask me why. I didn't even know what it was about. I knew what a Green Book was, and I knew that they had already put out like a documentary on the Green Book, which I did see. And when I heard it was like a movie, I just didn't even care. But it won an Oscar, right? So shout out to Mahershala Ali, another Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. But everybody, y'all know, it was a pretty crazy White People's Black History Month. For us black people, we carry on making history every day. So what's up for the weekend? Isn't it payday? Friday's payday. And it's the end of the month. Or the first of the month. If you're a business owner, it's payroll day, which I know is a dreaded day for most business owners. What a hassle. Sometimes your printer breaks down. Your goddamn reporting software doesn't work right. And you end up spending all night in the office trying to get your people paid. And they trying to get out and party. But you stuck in the office. As for me and my fam, Friday is movie night. I know it sounds corny, but the older I get, boring is turned up when you're old and you got kids and a wife, and I love it. I love cuddling up with my kids, my wife, and watching the movie. So I actually look forward to it. To a day when we all kind of just sit down and have a reason to veg. It's also sushi night, but the rent is due, so yeah, we'll be eating like tuna fish sandwiches and potato chips and watching, I don't know what we're gonna watch this week. I'm really interested in seeing this, the Harry Potter spinoff joint. Was it Magical Beasts and Where to Find Them? But the new one, the one with Johnny Depp, I haven't heard anything about it necessarily, but you know, it just looks cool. I like Johnny Depp. Hopefully this one is good. Saturday before last, we went to a kite festival. That was amazing. It was really a lot more fun and a lot cooler than I thought it might be. It sounded cool, but it was even cooler than I expected. It was just that cool. It's like, just imagine flying kites in the sky. And the kites are all shapes and sizes. Huge kites, man. Kites as big as family reunion tents. Small as paper plates. They had everything from mermaid, dragons, manta rays. They had kites that were flying other kites. It was pretty cool. We had a kite and it was fun. It took me back to my childhood in Trinidad when we used to make kites out of like popsicle sticks and twine and shit. It was dope. So tomorrow we'll be doing, in the evening, we'll actually go into a hot air balloon event or something like that. I guess we watch. I'm not sure. It's like, I don't know. I found it on Eventbrite and thought it was just something cool to do. And it was cheap. I usually go for free or cheap. You know what I mean? It was like a bulk, like $20 for everybody to go. The only thing is it's all the way to hell down in Homestead, which is really far for us. But hopefully it'll be worth it. And then I'll be killing two birds with one stone because I'm actually working this weekend on the podcast doing some research for you guys. So I'm going on a field trip for the hair care series that we're doing. Because, see, the latest episode, which hasn't done much numbers at all, I've only gotten 12 listeners since we dropped it last week. And I did get some feedback from a faithful listener who said that she felt like she was being talked at and preached to because she felt like the doctor was a little bit too clinical and it was coming from a white woman. They felt like my daughter was like very biased. Anger like came through. And she admitted that she felt even a bit offended, as if, so like it came up as if we were blaming black women for exposing their bodies and their babies to asthma and other health issues. So I was like, dang, like, that's not at all what we were trying to do. We thought we were just giving it out. But then she schooled me on like the culture around getting your hair did. And that, because I remember I said in there, I said, hair lotion. I was going over the list of things that had all these harmful chemicals in it. And one of the things was like hot oil treatment, root stimulators, shit I never heard of. I don't do hair. I don't put stuff like that in my hair. Neither do my daughters. So I had never heard of it. And one of them was hair lotions. Like all of that stuff sounds plausible. Okay, I could see a hot oil treatment. I could, root stimulators make total sense. Relaxers, straighteners, all that stuff makes sense. But hair lotion didn't make sense to me. But then she was like, you said that. And I was like, I got my hair lotion right here. We call it creamy crack. I was like, what? Okay, so guess what? I invited her on the show to discuss it and give her point of view. Maybe even do a commentary on what we did and how she felt about it. So she's actually going to take me on a product buying field trip. She's going to take me to the beauty salons in the hood and we'll actually look through some of these products, because she happens to have just also gone natural. So she's just coming off of putting the straighteners and the hot oils in her hair. And she happened to mention to me that a coworker came to her saying that his daughter had a cyst in her scalp. They figured out that it was actually the shampoo that was causing it. If you felt preached to, talked at, if you felt like we were blaming you, that is absolutely not the case whatsoever. And I do need to find out what the culture is. It's one thing to sort of sit there and study it and learn what the products are and what harmful things are in it. But it's a whole other thing to actually immerse myself in, like, experience our black women actually having, those who have yet to transition. Because this is not, that episode is not just for women who've already transitioned. I'm not trying to preach to the choir, you know what I mean? I want all women to be informed about what they're doing so they can make healthier decisions for them and for their children. So if it's going to turn the people who really need it off, then I do my homework, and that's what I'll be doing on Saturday. I'm trying new things. I want to see if I can do the podcast more often just to give myself more practice. So, but before I sign off, though, I know I said I wasn't going to wax political anymore. And don't worry, because I'm not. I want to mention the whole, you know, the Michael Cohen House Oversight Committee, if anyone saw it, where he pretty much just snitched on Trump and, like, he let the cat out the bag. I mean, he told on that dude that he looked like a third grade kid. It was just like, nope, we did it. I saw him.
The person who knows the whereabouts of these documents would be David Pecker.
David Pecker, Barry Levine, or Dylan Howard.
Okay, thank you. To your knowledge, did the president ever provide inflated assets to an insurance company?
Yes.
Who else knows that the president did this?
Alan Weisselberg, Ron Lieberman, and Matthew Calamari.
And where would the committee find more information on this? Do you think we need to review his financial statements and his tax returns in order to compare them?
Yes, and you'd find it at the Trump Org.
Thank you very much. Do you know, to your knowledge, was the president interested in reducing his local real estate tax bills?
Yes.
And how did he do that?
What you do is you deflate the value of the asset, and then you put in a request to the tax department for a deduction.
Who would know the answer to those questions?
Alan Weisselberg.
He literally reminded me like a big kid. But the only thing I want you to bring that up is where he quotes Trump as saying...
He once asked me if I could name a country run by a black person that wasn't a shithole. And while we were once driving through a struggling neighborhood in Chicago, he commented that only black people could live that way.
Ever since that has come up, which is just a couple of days ago now, in my little circles, and even on the media, black media, I'm hearing coming up where people are almost like agreeing with him. And they're like, oh, but it's true. You know, like, not that only black people would live like this, but just how black people live. And it's like, it's almost like we associate blacks with this extreme level of poverty. And it kind of pissed me off because we are not, black is not synonymous with poverty. And we are not the poorest people in the world. Like, they point to Africa and Haiti and say these places are the poor, as if we're the just the dregs. And it's just not true. that's a bunch of mess. There are whites that live in abject poverty. It does exist in the U.S. and in the world. I know whites want like this little ethno state lined with Starbucks and everyone dons Abercrombie and French, but it's not like that for all white people. White people here in the homeland and abroad, they live in levels of poverty that make the wire look like 90210. You think I'm joking? So do not let us get it twisted. Google, or better yet, pull it up on YouTube. White people in South Africa and see how they are living.
The system of apartheid made many white South Africans see themselves as a superior race. They had the best houses, the best jobs, and education. When apartheid ended in 1991, legislative white privilege ceased to exist. I'd seen a lot of black poverty in squatter camps in the 1980s, but I was not prepared to see white poverty today. Lucette Thomas, a grandmother, has lived in this squatter camp for 3 years.
Yes, thank you.
It's a little bit dark inside.
Yes, it is a little. But what about electricity?
No, nothing.
You don't have electricity here?
Nothing. I'm just using candle, my primer stove.
This is Coronation Park, a squatter camp in Krugersdorp, South Africa. This camp is one of a growing number of townships populated mostly by Afrikaners, white South Africans. In spite of this, white South Africans still control most of the country's economy.
Who doesn't remember freaking Marshall Mathers and how he was living at 8 Mile in a trailer park? You know, that's what we say, trailer trash, poor white trash. That's what we used to say when I grew up. And I grew up in Syracuse, New York. So I saw white poverty. It lived across the street from me, and it's not pretty. White poverty is not Santa Claus. It does exist.
Well, I'm joined live from San Francisco by the author J.D. Vance. His best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, depicts what it's like to grow up white and poor in America, and it's taken the country by storm. J.D. Vance, drug problems, joblessness, poverty, parents abandoning or unable to look after their children, that's familiar to you, isn't it? That's your story.
Yes, unfortunately, it's very familiar to me. It's what I write about in the book. And if you look at the data, or if you just go and talk to some of the folks who live in Eastern Kentucky or Southern Ohio like you did, you realize that those stories are awfully common, too common, I think.
I mean, that's exactly right. We stopped people randomly in the street, and all of them said they knew somebody who'd been affected by drugs or had been brought up by grandparents. What has gone wrong in these communities?
So what's happened is that as people have lost jobs, if people have lost hope, they've really, I think in some ways, turned over to other habits or other things to try to dull that pain. And that's a big part of where this opioid crisis comes from. It's not just people who like drugs or want to be addicted to drugs. It's that they're really trying to find something to do, something to dull that pain that comes from living in areas that are really struggling.
I mean, you describe it in your book as a cultural crisis. What is it about white working class poor communities that is in crisis, would you say? What is it about the lifestyle, if you like, or the culture?
Well, I think that the biggest problem is that folks have really lost hope in these communities. And so one of the things I realized when I was a kid, one of the things my grandma really recognized in me, is that there was a certain cultural message that I was getting from my neighborhood, from my family, from the people around me, that there really wasn't any hope left, that no matter how hard you worked, no matter how hard you tried to get ahead, it wasn't going to result in anything. And I think it's important to recognize that life is unfair in these communities. I'm sure you saw it when you visited. But there's also something important to be said for continuing to believe that you have some control over your life, that you have some agency over your life. And when people have lost that, it really creates a lot of self-destructive tendencies.
You know, because I know there's been a lot of news people who've rolled through here and just take out the image of Beattyville, the poorest white town in the country.
It's home. It's no matter what we have or what we don't have, it's always going to be home. But in all honesty, in a small community like us that's been going downhill for 40 years, a lot of people, they draw money from the government. No jobs leads to no money, which leads to depression, which leads to drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, we just have 35% of our high school kids graduate. So
wow. Most of these white supremacists, neo-Nazi, alt-right, white nationalists, Aryan Brotherhood, biker gang, militia types, how do you think that they're living? They live in poverty. What kind of issues do you think they live under? You think they, no? Why do you think they're so freaking angry? No, man. More whites are on government assistance than at all minorities combined at one point. That might have been how at one point. Maybe it has changed now that the Hispanic population has grown more. But they're on welfare way more than black people, for sure. So this whole idea of the black welfare queen, that's just them feeding you shit. That's just a myth to give you that idea. White people are the welfare goddesses. I mean, look it up. They just don't talk about it. It's just this thing that, because even they're indoctrinated to believe that they're better off than niggas, to shut them up and redirect their aggression from the away from rich elites, rich white elites. They turn their anger towards blacks, Jews, and liberals. But who truly has orchestrated their poverty? The same people that orchestrated everybody else's poverty, rich white men. I mean, they live in broken homes, alcoholism, meth addiction, heroin addiction. And who did that to them? Not liberals, not Jews, certainly not us. Rich white men, I say it again. There was a time when they were fully aware of this, but they got handed a little bit of land and they got the little house. And then they went the way of Floyd Mayweather, you know. They became. Or Steve Harvey, like, these poor niggers. You just only a little bit better than us. That's it. You just got land. That's it. So I say all that to say, yo, leave us alone. Leave black people alone. We good. We will deal with us. Poverty is a global phenomenon, all right? Not just black nations, Haiti, Jamaica. You know, you want to pick countries in sub-Saharan Africa. You think all Russians over there are living large? You don't think they live in poverty, especially right after the Cold War when the Soviet Union fell? Yo, half of those people over there on that side of the world go to bed thirsty. Think about that. Think about how many countries are living in ruins after decades of war. Come on, man. Just look up what's happening in Greece and France right now. They live in poverty. Their poverty is bad.
Greece now has the highest poverty rate in the European Union, and the crisis on the streets is only intensifying for the homeless. You're out there on the streets every single day. What are you seeing?
Thank you, Rosemary. Yes, we are out on the streets every single day, and what we can say and what we experience is that we are facing a situation where an already decimated society that is dealing with a paralyzed social state and with absolutely insignificant relief mechanisms is experiencing every day this issue more and more.
The food banks bear witness to increasing numbers of French people living in poverty, and the country is suffering rising inequality, according to the latest figures from the French government. The statistics cover 2009, the latest data available, when the economic crisis was starting to bite. In that year, 8.2 million out of a population of 60 million lived under the official poverty threshold of €954 per month.
Empty stomachs are just one of the many signs of increasing poverty in Britain. Over the last 2 months, this food distribution centre has seen a 15% increase in the number of people it's feeding compared to last year.
Sadly, because of the recession and the economic downturn in our country, we're seeing a lot more people referred to the food bank. So we anticipate growth, pressure. We anticipate the need for more donations of food from the public.
Today in the UK, charity food centres don't feed just homeless or unemployed people. 85% of those who come here are people who work, but only for a very low wage.
But they put it forward, they just stick it in our head that, like, we are the worst off ever. Who would live like this? White people live like shit. But we, us, the God people, the oldest, most robust, only human DNA on the planet, are not at the bottom of the poverty totem pole. Don't forget now, Trinidad and Tobago, which Trump might consider a shithole country, a predominantly brown-skinned black country, Hindus there, Douglas, has the third largest GDP in the Western Hemisphere behind Canada and the US. The Western Hemisphere! an entire hemisphere, Trinidad, little teeny tiny Trinidad, that is nothing more than an apostrophe above South America. That's better than all of Europe, all the countries of South and Central America. Trinidad. No other U.S. immigrants send more money back home than Jamaicans. Think about all the immigrants that come here. I don't, you know, you got people from Eastern Europe, especially it's a new thing now, Russians are coming and stuff like that. But nobody sends more money back home than Jamaicans. They take care of themselves. Remember too, Black Americans collectively, our earning power is better than more than half of the countries on the planet. The planet. It's number 16 in GDP we would be if we were sovereign. Man, don't get gassed. Remember, slavery is over. Now we're fighting enslavement. The new Jim Crow plays out in our minds and cycles, in the processes and the cogs of the justice system, you know. It's all systematic. It's the Matrix. That's okay though. Let them keep believing the same mess about us, but we know different. We know different. We are not that. We are not defined by that. Just like we're not defined by black, and black is not a description of us, we are not defined by our poverty, and poverty does not describe us. Anywhere you find us. So it's Friday, y'all. Time to free up. Free up that mindset that they got us in. All we need is love. And remember, we're a people of many lands, of many nations, many tongues, but we are one people. Remember who our enemies are. Save your anger and your disdain for them. They're out there scrambling to make sure we don't snap out of it. Just change your mind a little bit. Speaking of that piece of Dr. Umar, I heard that his school agenda is moving strong. He's checking off items on his to-do list now. I think he just asked for graphic designer to do like a paint job, to just do some cool designs on the buildings. I know some people don't like Umar. I can't for the life of me figure out why. I don't know. I like Dr. Umar. I appreciate what he's doing. And also shout out to Sean King. He's relaunching the North Star, standing on the shoulders of giants. Now check that link there, because Umar's school and Sean King's paper. I think Umar's just naming the school at the Frederick Douglass. And then King is actually relaunching Frederick Douglass's old paper, North Star. And shout out to Phil of Dreams, Agnew, formerly of Dream Defenders here in Florida, who just landed a staff writer position with North Star. That's going to be a powerful freaking Black Justice League right there. If you don't know Philip Agnew, you definitely want to look him up. He doesn't know me. I'm talking like I know him, but he doesn't know me. But I know him just through Dream Defenders. My daughter was a part of Dream Defenders briefly, and I'm close to me. Because since I work in the community, I'm close to a lot of people who work directly, with devoted to doing work with Dream Defenders. So shout out to them, like Miss J, Johanna, Nerland. It's going to be dope to have him. That's going to be a powerhouse, man. That's going to be like, Northstar's going to be like TMZ with a moral compass and a social conscience. Or like World Star for Justice. I can't wait to see what they do. Come back tomorrow for my Reading Black Lit review. I got some new literature on hand that I'm actually going to finish up. Actually, some graphic novels by a Black writer, Black company that I'm going to go over real quick. I'm not even going to say the name of them yet. I want y'all to be in suspense. I'm going to read those tonight and then do a lit review for it for you guys on Saturday. And then if you come back again on Sunday, you will hear the rebroadcast for Jameela Rouser of Wash Day and updates on, you know, her latest endeavors. So that's me, Shay Good Guy. Shay, double A, good guy, one word, good guy, being black on earth. Shay Good Guy, being black on earth. If you want to donate or support, you can go to anchor.fm and patreon.com/beingblackonearth. If you want to talk shit or chop it up with me, beingblackonearth.com is the website, Being Black on Earth Facebook page. You can follow me on IG. I'm at SHAA Good Guy, one word, where I post some pretty cool stuff. You might like the stuff I post. I just did a promo that did pretty well. I think people just like the logo rather than the actual message. That sucks, but whatever. Twitter, Black on Earth. So if you can find me on Twitter, it's just at Black on Earth. Also at Shay, SHAA Good Guy, one word, where I tweet very black. My tweets are very black. You definitely want to check out my Twitter. My Twitter is completely slept on, relatively speaking, since I'm so new to this. My IG takes off, but I guess IG is a pretty good platform for taking off quick. My Twitter, not so much. But my Twitter is very lit, if I must say so myself. It's like a little one-man party going on over there. And sometimes, I get in. I go in on the Larry Elders, the Thomas Sowells, the Candace Owens, like speaking directly to them. They never answer me though. So help me get up to 1,000 listeners, and the first 5 people with the most constructive critiques will get a Being Black on Earth and a Dark Skin Society t-shirt. So I was saying before that I tweaked the logo. So the logo did so good on the promo that I tweaked a little, like perfected it, because I had some little issues that I wasn't really bothered with. But since I saw that people liked the logo, I was getting like on like 400 likes. I only have like 200 followers, so I thought that was pretty good. So that made me say, yep, do some t-shirts. And I have a Being Black on Earth t-shirt, and I have a Dark Skin Society t-shirt. But I will only do that once I get up to 1,000 listeners. Right now, I made 100 listeners for the month of February. So that's another good thing that happened for white people, black history for me. This is the first month I had 100 listeners to all the different episodes that I released this month. I think I released 4, maybe 5 episodes this month. And grand total, I got 100 listeners. So I really appreciate that for those who are tuning in, but I'm still not getting any feedback. So when I get feedback, the gifts will come out. And I notice I said the first 5 with the most constructive critiques. So that's obviously going to be a subjective thing. The ones I find most constructive. And it doesn't mean you have to be nice to me. You don't have to cater to me. You can be honest. You can be, just don't be rude. Just don't be an asshole, straight up. No, just be sucker free. That's all I ask. So I think y'all will love the new logo, and I guess I'll get some feedback from that. And what I'll do is I'll put a mock-up of the t-shirts, what those will look like. Yo, we're all we've got, we're all we've ever had. Be good to yourselves, be good to one another. Baba Shay, Being Black on Earth.
They'll teach you history, yeah. but they'll teach you what they want you to think is,
and none of it has ever been true.
Man, I'm just out here being,
yeah.
I'm sure they would have done something
I'm being black.
Beautiful with that.
And now,
and everything real. Just.
I'm sure they would have done
everything that it means to be black.